This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
Welcome into The Jump Around 3.0. We are thrilled. Today we're going to be joined by Adam Rittenberg. We got two shows this week, so two shows in 2025 to kick the year off right. And we'll get to Adam Rittenberg in a minute. We're going to talk to him about the Xavier Lucas situation, Luke Fickell, Jeff Grimes, the coaching staff, along with some NIL stuff, and Brett Bielema. So we'll have to get into all of that. But I want to start, Ryan, with Colton Bartholomew. Had some good insight into the situation with Xavier Lucas and the Wisconsin Badgers. I believe there's a statement from Lucas's agent in there. This is like an online agent. The whole thing is weird because it seems like Xavier Lucas found this agent online in a very much sort of Bob Odenkirk's, what's the guy from Better Call Saul. Sort of way of Xavier Lucas's stories out there. This guy retweets it, tries to draw attention to himself, and lo and behold, this guy's Xavier Lucas's attorney. And that's not against Xavier Lucas, more against the attorney. But I would say that the whole thing needs to end, and it needs to end with Wisconsin letting Xavier Lucas out of his commitment. But I don't mind Wisconsin holding his feet to the fire, because there has to be some lines drawn in the sand. It's honestly, it seems similar to the situation, obviously, the inverse of it, where maybe UNLV made some promises to a quarterback, and that quarterback said, either pay me or I'm leaving, and Marcus Cromartie, former Badger, was involved in some sort of lawyer agency sort of thing. And I was fine with that, because if we take it at face value, that in that case, UNLV, the university, made promises to the player that were not kept, and the player said, you committed to me, I committed to you, you're not following through. And if it's the inverse now, I'm okay with Wisconsin holding Xavier Lucas's feet to the fire, but at the same time, you can't force this kid to play, you can't force him to keep here. It's bad optics at some point, but I don't hate Wisconsin just being a little bit principled on this before they let him go.
I agree. 100% across the board, where it's like, if you signed a new NIL deal, like, give the money back, like, however much it is. It's, like yes. You said, it's the principle of it at this point, because it's, who knows how much money it was, per se, and it's probably not going to kill the NIL fund if they don't get the money back. But it's, you can't let the precedent of this, like, kids signing deals and then dashing.
Yes.
Like dealing and dashing. Like, you cannot have this. But I agree, like, there's no feasible way where I think he plays for the Badgers again. I can't even imagine, like, the emotional aspect of, like, teammates and, like, coaches and working with these people again. It just seems like the messiest situation possible that just needs to end.
And I'm pulling this from memory, but Jared Udoff, I believe, transferred from Wisconsin and went to Iowa, and Bo Ryan held it up a little bit. And I defended Bo Ryan on it as well, because, one, he wanted to hold Jared's feet to the fire, but my understanding of this, and I can't remember if it's public or not, is that Jared made sure to go to the office when Bo wasn't there and slipped his note of wanting to leave under the door. Or maybe his girlfriend did it. It was not the most above board way. And all Bo said is that, I just need him to tell me and do this in person. That's why I didn't allow it right away. I want the conversation. And then it went there. Bo had to eat it publicly, and he did. All's well that ends well. Jared Udoff had a fine career at Iowa. Wisconsin was fine without him. But I do remember that situation too. So it's not the first time universities have been like, how about we just handle this better? Because this feels like the transfer request maybe was way too close than the signing of the deal.
It sounds like it was like fully after the deal.
But I'm saying that, like, but I feel like it's like right after. Like, he signed the deal, and then like 2 days later, he's like, all right. So it's almost like you had a mistress lined up, and then your wife, and you're like surprised. Your wife's like, whoa, what's going on here? Because this divorce settlement needs to be figured out a little bit better. And so that's what I think is happening. There could be just a lot of, what's going on with the divorce settlement? Give me my money back.
You know what we need? We need NIL prenups.
We do need NIL prenups. Prenups are just contracts. So, yes, we need contracts.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I want to save time for Rittenberg today. Tonight, we got the Orange Bowl, Notre Dame versus Penn State. I would love to see an all Big Ten sort of national championship, but I think this is the game. I like Notre Dame. I'm not one of those Notre Dame haters. I understand that there's a little bit of our crap doesn't stink aspect of Notre Dame. I like Freeman. I like some of the players. I think it's good for college football, good for sports to see Notre Dame in that national championship. And if they get there, it's not like, back in the day when they got there with Manti Te'o and they just got worked. They maybe didn't belong. They're not getting there on their name if they get there. They're getting there because they win football games. And I hope Notre Dame wins and beats Penn State. And also, we know my stance at Penn State. That program shouldn't exist. So, I'm going Notre Dame.
I agree with you. I think Notre Dame has the edge for sure. I think best player in the game still plays for Penn State, Tyler Warren. He didn't do a ton against Wisconsin in that game.
Also, don't they have a lineman?
Abdul Carter's questionable.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So he hurt his shoulder against against Boise State.
His name's popped up in draft stuff, so that's why I was like, that guy's a beast.
Oh yeah,
doing
certainly.
My Bears pre-draft scouting now.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. He's probably the highest prospect in this draft for sure. Like, it's not even a question. But the real question is just like, I don't know, can Notre Dame contain Tyler Warren, and I give him a good chance to win.
And then the other one that'll be Friday night, Ohio State, and Notre Dame's favored by 1.5. The other one is Ohio State versus Texas, Ohio State -5.5. And I think Ohio State wins this one. These are two teams that just seem to be really good, yet somehow disappoint their fans. I understand losing to Michigan stings, but there should be no disappointment from Ohio State fans for this season. I think they're going to end up the national championship game. And I honestly would find it hilarious if they win it, because so many of the Ohio State fans want their coach fired, and you can't fire a coach that either gets the national championship game or wins the national championship. So just for chaos purposes and Big Ten representation, I'm going to go Ohio State versus Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right across the board. And it's funny because it is the most annoying national championship matchup, too.
Yes.
I know you don't dislike Notre Dame, but it's the Yankees versus – it's Yankees-Dodgers.
Yes.
It really is. But even worse, it's Yankees-Astros almost. Like, it's two very unlikable programs. Yeah. Dodgers, to me, are, like, likable. I don't even think Dame can compare to them. Maybe, but Mets are kind of a joke, whereas Notre Dame and Ohio State are very, like – talk about resources and talk about like Northern college football programs. Yeah. They are like the tippy top. It's them in Michigan, really. So it's, but yes, that look, we are ESPN employees essentially. And hey man, ESPN's going to love the national championship between Ohio State and Notre Dame.
That will be a ratings bonanza.
And who wins?
If I'm going all the way through that, I'm going to go. Oh God, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're on a different level right now.
Yeah, I do agree with that. So I guess right now we're predicting Ohio State to win the national championship. The Badgers host Minnesota coming up on Friday, so we'll review that when we get back on Tuesday. But let's get to Adam Rittenberg in a second. Of course, our guests on the show are brought to you by Steinhoffels. Right now at Steinhoffels, get a new Tempur-Pedic mattress and save up to $300. Discover the advantage that advanced pressure-relieving power of Tempur-Pedic makes for you. It makes aches and pains a thing of the past. Upgrade your sleep with an adjustable base and save up to $500. An adjustable base can also help maybe a little bit with snoring. I'm not going to say that for sure, but it can help depending on your situation with that. Use Steinhoffel's 60-month financing and get a queen Tempur-Pedic mattress for just $48 a month. Don't overpay for a good night's sleep. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com. $48 a month. I mean, that is a very... And again, the 60-month financing is something I've used in the past. It's helpful. You need that furniture. And look, invest in your sleep. Again, steinhoffels.com. You can shop in store or steinhoffels.com. They present our guest, and our next guest is Adam Rittenberg.
People who are at their best get their beauty rest. Test Rest, a beauty rest black mattress at Steinhoffels for your chance to win a dream vacation to Hawaii. Queen Beauty Rest mattresses start at just $42 per month when you use Steinhoffels 60-month financing. Upgrade your sleep to the beauty rest black and get $300 in Steinhoffels cash. Don't overpay for a good night's sleep. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com.
Welcome back to the Jump Around 3.0, the second episode of 2025, and we're thrilled to be joined by ESPN's Adam Rittenberg. And Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. A lot of interesting stuff that you've written recently on ESPN, but I wanted to, before we get into your pick of Luke Fickell possibly on the hot seat, I understand we'll properly set that up because it was kind of one of those where, hey, what coaches could be in theory. It's not necessarily you're reporting that. It was more insightful. But I want to initially get your thoughts on the offseason for the Badgers in general. The players going out, some of the players coming in, the coaching changes. Like, where do you feel about this state of the program? Do you think fans should be encouraged, discouraged, or just kind of wait and see with what's going on over the last couple months since the season's wrapped up?
Right. Well, I think, you know, Luke made a move that he had to, even though it was obviously a difficult one with Phil Longo. It just wasn't working out.
Yeah.
And it kind of reconfirmed what a lot of coaches around the league thought when they brought him in, that it just wasn't going to work there, even though he's obviously a good coach and has a good reputation and track record. So, you know, I think by bringing in Jeff Grimes, who I've known for a long time and, you know, offensive line guy, wants to run the ball, I think we'll be a little bit closer philosophically to the identity that had been around the program for a long time. So I think that was the most important change. And there's obviously been some other moves here and there on the staff. But I think, again, Wisconsin needs to more closely resemble what we saw over the years from that program. And obviously, Jeff, I think, is able to do that. So obviously a really difficult way to end the season. But, you know, they've at least positioned themselves for a different story in 2025.
Yeah, and with actually, let's start with Grimes here. We talked to some folks with ties to Kansas, and obviously Lance Leipold is someone that we all know here in Wisconsin, having coached at Whitewater, making his way down to Kansas. And so I know I have at least watched the program and talking to some people around it. It seemed like it was kind of a almost like what happened here with Wisconsin with Longo, where it was like, hey, you're a big name, you're a talented guy, maybe let's come in and see if it works. It's not that Longo isn't a good offensive coordinator or that Grimes wasn't good at Kansas. It's just it didn't fit, and now Kansas is going in-house to replace Grimes, and Grimes became available. Do you think what happened at Kansas, that Grimes was available after a year, was one of those sort of things where, hey, it was more successful than Longo was at Wisconsin, but maybe long-term it was just better for everyone to let Grimes find a different position that maybe he fits in better philosophically?
Yeah, it was a weird year for Kansas's offense. I mean, they still were up there in terms of yards per play. They moved the ball. They obviously had a really good performance against Colorado, which was a game that kept Colorado out of the Big 12 championship. But, you know, you go 5-7 with one of your more talented rosters, and, you know, Jalen Daniels and Devin Neal and all sorts of excellent players on that team. And there were some late game issues that really cropped up, especially early in the season, which were leading to some of those narrow losses. And so I just think in totality, you know, they felt they tried it, wasn't a complete failure, but wasn't a huge success either. And you know, with Jim Zabrowski being there, who'd worked with Jalen Daniels, Jalen Daniels coming back for another year, Lance Leipold decided to go in that direction after Jeff moved on. So again, I think this is a case where, in theory, it could work out for both.
Yeah,
we don't see that too often in college football, but it is possible in this case.
We have seen it. We don't have to get specifically into the names, but it looks like Wisconsin has tried to get a little bigger at wide receiver. I would imagine that helps with the overall blocking in the run game, because Kansas and at Baylor, like, Grimes likes to run the ball, 200 yards a game is not out of the question. And then also involving the tight end more, they got one of the top tight ends in the transfer portal. So it does seem like recruiting-wise, we're going to see, maybe it's not the Paul Chryst offense we saw the last few years, but maybe it's back to the Paul Chryst offense that he ran with Scott Tolzien, where it was a lot of running, a lot of tight ends, bigger wide receivers that could help blocking. Is that kind of what you're assuming, knowing the play calling from Grimes, but then also some of the bodies that they're trying to bring in the transfer portal?
Right. I think this is something that real reconfirms, you know, what they want to be going forward. And, you know, Jeff's a guy that, again, has coached offensive line, has coached tight ends, former offensive lineman. You know, he wants a certain body type, and I think he has some, you know, ideas for personnel that maybe are a little bit different from what Phil Longo was doing. And so you want options at tight end, and you want some big bodies, you want some different backs, maybe a different type of receiver than maybe they've had the last couple of seasons. So yeah, I think it's all in line with what you want your vision to be, which again should be more closely aligned with what Wisconsin has been. I mean, this is a move towards Wisconsin identity that a lot of people remember and appreciated and respected for years and years and years, and that they made a departure from after Luke Fickell got there. And so if this doesn't look a little bit more like the Wisconsin of old, then there's probably something that isn't working.
Before we move to Luke Fickell in general, you talked about Grimes coming in the back on the offensive line. I like the move of Kenny Guyton, who was their wide receivers coach, moving to quarterback. I remember him playing at Ohio State. He didn't play a ton, but during the time he played at Ohio State, he was successful, played a little bit was, I think, practice squad for the Bills. So I like the idea of a young up-and-coming coach who played quarterback and played quarterback and has been around Luke Fickle, one of those guys that has a little bit of history with him from their time together, that, or at least knowing the school, that I like this move for Wisconsin, putting a quarterback coaching quarterbacks. I think that always seems to make sense.
Right, yeah, and it's interesting, you know, when you have offensive coordinators that don't work with the quarterback, yeah. Sometimes that's a little bit of a red flag. But I think in this case, you know, having a guy like Kenny, who's obviously been around, who knows, the personnel and Coach Fickle, I think is something that could work out well for this program. And you know, Luke has done this at other stops. Mike Denbrock, who is his offensive coordinator at Cincinnati, has worked with tight ends primarily. That's what he's doing at Notre Dame right now. They have a separate quarterback coach, and Gino Gadulli for the Irish. So I think this is something that certainly has some potential. And Kenny Guyton's young notable kind of rising coach in the business. So curious to see how it works out.
So speaking of working out, we're talking with Adam Rittenberg on the Jump Around, Jim Rutledge with you. And you can see us on ESPN Madison's YouTube page, Listen Back, Wisconsin on the Man, Apple, Spotify, any of those great places. You wrote an article. I'll first give the premise of what the article was and then how you landed on Luke Fickle for your choice.
Yeah, so again, this is not a piece I enjoy doing, but it's something that we do every year because people are interested in it. And in covering the coaching cycle, we preview the next coaching cycle. And so instead of just having a basic list and people could sort of interpret how hot the seat is for each coach, we created some tiers. And so you can't do that again tier. We had that for coaches that really bottomed out. Some coaches that can't, that maybe bait bowl games, but really can't afford to backslide and miss a bowl game in 2025. And then again, I think Lou Fickle's in that category of, clearly people want this to work at Wisconsin. Chris McIntosh really stuck his neck out, made the change with Paul Chris, didn't retain Jim Leonard, and brought in Luke Fickle, who at the time was seen as an absolute home run hire, a guy that was going to have his pick of Power Four jobs, and he comes to Wisconsin. But again, what it also represented, and I'm sure you've talked about this a lot on your show, is it's a departure from the Barry Alvarez tree, from kind of what Wisconsin had been for decades and decades. And I've talked to some former players from that era who feel very disconnected from this version of Wisconsin. And so that increases pressure on everybody, especially when the results haven't been there and you have a finish to the season like you had in 2024 to be better, because this is not the Big Ten where Wisconsin, you could pencil it in for 10 wins every year. This is a different Big Ten. It's a tougher Big Ten. It's a league that likely will, I shouldn't say likely, but possibly have a national champion for a second consecutive year. And so you don't want to slip too far back in this conference where you're struggling to make bowl games when the previous administration there at Wisconsin was just on the cusp of making the college football playoffs. So it increases some pressure for this year. I think you need real results in a conference that is only getting harder, at a place where a lot of people around the conference were wondering, what are you? And that was never something people wondered when Brett Bielema was there, when Paul Chryst was there.
Right.
Everybody knew what Wisconsin was, and I think right now people aren't sure.
And I think to change in playing style could help people feel more connected, because whether it's Joe Thomas, Melvin Gordon, James White, Anthony Davis, we've had a lot of players on, and at best they say, hey, it's fine. I mean, Coach Alvarez, we've had him on too, and he says, hey, it's fine if we don't want to throw back to my era. And the players have said it as well. Some have been more of put off by the fact that maybe they haven't been welcomed. They're not welcome there. That's just not outwardly sought like it has been under the Barry Alvarez kind of umbrella. So it is something that I could honestly just be fixed, Adam. I think run the ball more and win, and I think people are just going to feel better about the program.
Right, and I think, again, people are used to visually how a Wisconsin football team operates, and it's been jarring here the last couple of years. But I think there's probably a certain portion of Wisconsin fans that wanted a change, that wanted Wisconsin to be a little bit more aggressive in the portal and to look for better quarterbacks. And again, they've tried, and it just for different reasons hasn't worked out so far. So I think certain people, this is what you asked for, and mm-hmm. You're in a transition. But you know, it's year three of that. And, you know, you brought in a coach who was really successful at his last stop, who was very successful as an assistant coach at Ohio State, who knows the conference. It's time for results. And I think that's fair to expect here in year three from a Luke Fickell regime there.
So the other thing that I have before we get to Perry Alvarez's thoughts on some of Brett Bielema's antics during the bowl game, and then I know you guys had a little interaction on social media as well, but the Xavier Lucas transfer portal NIL situation, and Colton Bartholomew from the Wisconsin State Journal has done a good job reporting on this. Long story short for the listeners out there is that there seems to be a disagreement that Wisconsin has not let Lucas out of his commitment, quote-unquote commitment, to play for Wisconsin, and maybe there was a contract and maybe some money paid out. This is where it gets a little gray, and Lucas wants to leave the university. The university is trying to hold him accountable. There's lawyers involved now. It doesn't have to be specific to this incident, Adam, but what do we make of this idea of players? And we saw this, and actually a former Badger, Marcus Cromartie, was involved in it out at UNLV with the quarterback out there, and what was promised and what was owed, and players stopped playing because they felt like they weren't paid out. And this time the university is saying, well, you're not holding up your end of the bargain. How messy is this going to get? Maybe not even this specific situation, but just in general, I feel like this is only going to get worse in college football.
Yeah, I think until there's, you know, very clear processes for contracts and, you know, what the schools have and what the players have, and there's terms and there's, you know, a length of contract and obviously deliverables, just like any normal employment contract, it's going to be, you're going to have situations like this. Yeah, I'm not, you know, super familiar specifically with this one, but there's ones around the country that have popped up here in the last few years. Where, you know, an agreement seems to be in place and then something happens and someone wants to get out of it. So it's unfortunate. We're in this very dynamic transition where, you know, I don't know how long it'll last, but this is a very unstable, you know, period for coaches and players and their families. You know, we're, for the most part, most or all of the leverage is on the player side. And the coaches and schools are just having to kind of scramble and hope they have locked people in, and in some cases think they've locked someone in and they haven't. So certainly not the last type of situation we'll get of that nature until there are, you know, kind of full-blown contracts in college football.
Do you think we get to that point? Because having full control or having a leverage seems nice in theory for the players, but there's a lot of players stuck in the portal or went nowhere. And the portal, in theory, I love the idea of the portal, and I love the idea of name and likeness. I do feel like we need to call this what it is, which is pay for play. There's very, very small actual instances of name, image, likeness, where I think of here in Wisconsin, you know, Madison, where Braylon Allen's endorsing Iron Jock. Like, that's getting paid for your brand and getting paid to actually endorse something. Getting a check and then showing up at a golf outing is not necessarily, that's more pay for play. And so there is a difference between what is actually happening and what we're calling it, but also the portal is a big part of it. Do you think that this is, you know, is it 2 years, 3 years? Like, how do you think this is resolved? Because I think in the long run, the players aren't going to be happy with this, and obviously the universities are stressing too.
Well, I think the House settlement and that going through is going to change a lot of things. And I think there's a sense that a lot of the external, I mean, there'll still be collectives, but a lot of the transactions will come within the university versus doing everything on the outside. I think in theory, and probably from a looking back, it was naive to think that, you know, let's just keep everything external from a school standpoint, and we'll be fine. Like, that wasn't a very smart way to think about it, you know, given, you know, who's involved and the loopholes and the different ways. And the fact that really, I mean, again, eligibility, we do a lot of, especially this time of year, projecting ahead to next season, figuring out who's eligible and how many years you have left. I mean, you know, yeah, sure, why not? He's got two more years. I thought he was done. Oh, but he's got two more years. Like, that's you know, that's where we're at right now. It's part of the overall chaos in the sport. So yeah, I think that 2025, I'd be surprised if we're not sitting here at the end of 2026, and this is a little bit more of a stable space than it is right now. I just don't think that the way it has been and the way it is a sustainable model for how to put together teams and really how to run a sport.
Yeah, and I'm not a political expert, but it does feel like the collectives are kind of like super PACs of like, oh yeah, we're not really involved, but you are kind of involved, and then it's kind of just sort of like who's controlling what, and then it just gets, I think it becomes exactly what nobody wanted. You know, it's everything they fought for it not to be, it turns into it. I want to get to, so obviously Brett Bielema here at Wisconsin was a guy who, and Barry obviously talked about this, but he won a lot of games, but when he left, I think fans were, I mean, they were worried about the state of the program, but at the same time, it wasn't. I think it was a 7-6 years last year here, and there was two teams suspended in front of him that got him to the Big Ten championship game. They won that game, so it was a little bit of a surprise. But Barry and Brett know each other very well, and we had Barry Alvarez on one of our shows the other day, and he was talking about Brett Bielema during the bowl game and his antics there.
And Brett pulled every trick in the book against him.
Yeah,
he can do one thing against him, he goes nuts. I know how that works.
But, Coach, and he goes over the sideline.
He's on the sideline taunting him.
He walks across the field to his guy that's down on the field, and then he's over there taunting
him. He wasn't checking his guy. Yeah. He wasn't checking his guy. He was going to go over there and taunt the young coach.
That is the truth.
Oh, he knew he was under his skin, and he was going to get him a little bit more.
And that's Barry Alvarez, and then Tarik Saleh, the all-time leader in sacks in UW history, and then Derek Engler, two former Barry Alvarez players on that show with Coach Alvarez. I mean, it's a pretty fair assessment that Brett always was trying to find the angles and then seems to be really upset because Wisconsin did it last year against Brett when anyone finds the angles against him.
Yeah, I think Brett loves those moments, maybe more than most coaches. He likes to needle. He likes to troll a little bit. I think it certainly has respect for Shane Beamer and South Carolina. But Brett also, and when I kind of like this because I don't think there has been enough of this in the Big Ten. I think Brett has sort of taken the Big Ten flag and he's waving it right now. And, you know, the Big Ten finally has the upper hand in this rivalry, which was dominated by the SEC and the Southern teams for so long. And I always joke with Brett, I think I've told him, it's like he's like the most Big Ten person on the planet. If you think about his affiliation now with three schools in the conference. So you kind of want a guy like that needling the South Carolina coach. But not just that, then going out and winning the game. I think there would have been a very different feeling to this, this altercation that took place, or even some of the social media stuff if South Carolina had won as many predicted them to win, including me, to be quite frankly, quite open with you. But Illinois won, and Brett had a great season, and they won 10 games for the first time since 2001. And Brett's doing his thing, and always trying to find a little bit of an edge. But I think it's great. Like, this is how college football was for many years. Coaches going at it, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then I think, in the last 20 years, it's been less so. But, I think, again, we think about the bowl games and is anyone going to care? Is anyone going to try? And you had a moment there that, is going to be remembered along with everything else that goes on in the playoff from this postseason. So I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
And then there could be a growing rivalry between Wisconsin and Illinois. I think there's three players, Leon Lowry, Curtis Neal, and then James Thompson, I believe, the three players from Wisconsin that went to Illinois in this transfer portal cycle. And then you also have Aaron Henry, a star player for Brett Bielema's defense back in the day, Aaron Henry, defensive coordinator / secondaries coach. And then you also have, and this is a throwback, I know, Adam, you'll know this, but Bart Miller did take over as offensive line coach for Brett Bielema. I believe Brett's last year when he had, I think Mike Markison was the offensive line coach. And I remember Bart, because I'm an FAU alum, he followed the coaching staff down to FAU for a little bit with Ben Strickland, and then all of a sudden their defense, Charlie Partridge was the head coach down there. Bart Miller was down there. So they have two guys from Wisconsin on the staff at Illinois, along with bringing in some players in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crossover there, and Jim Leonard was working there as an analyst.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
That was his first post Wisconsin gig, and now he's obviously back in the NFL. Brett is a guy that has an incredible network, including from his time there at Wisconsin, and he's got a number of former players who are coaching. Obviously, Aaron Henry doing a great job as the defensive coordinator. Jay Valai, who's a guy that I'm still close with, is out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, Chase the best.
There's others.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely a connection. You have a little bit of this around the Big Ten. There's a similar one. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like Minnesota and Rutgers have a ton of crossover because PJ Fleck worked for Greg Schiano. Mm-hmm. They've traded defensive coordinators. Kirk Ciarrocca moves from offensive coordinator at Minnesota to Rutgers, and he brings a quarterback with him. So there's a couple of these pairings in the Big Ten and around the country where it just seems like there's a ton of connections. And you know, obviously, Wisconsin and Illinois is becoming one of them.
And you and Brett had some fun on social. Sounds like you know Brett well. And this is literally, I want to, for anyone aggregating, this is literally just a hypothetical. But as we're talking here and you had to write the story about who could potentially be in the hot seat, is there a world that Bielema could end up back at Wisconsin if things didn't work out for Fickell? Mac knows him. It's not like they're not connected.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be interesting. I think there would be some hesitancy possibly on both ends to make that move. Even though, you know, obviously the fences have been mended with Barry, and I've written about that. I know you've probably discussed it. Yeah. You know, I just think it's a place that it would be hard for him to go back to, and maybe a hard place to welcome him back. But I think if things don't work out, they probably need somebody like Brett Bielema next, because it would be a return to who they are, but also somebody who has navigated the personnel space in the current, you know, landscape pretty well at Illinois. They've done well in the portal, and they've been able to keep their players. And so there's many traits that he brings. And I also think Brett's a better head coach, quite frankly, than he was even during his highest moments there at Wisconsin. So in a sense, it would be a good hire. I just don't know if it would be a hire that makes sense for both sides at this point, you know, given the history, because there's obviously a lot of baggage there.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just as I have his bio in front of me, and I see Barry Alvarez in Wisconsin listed in here 7 times. So it just popped in my head. I was like, you know what? It's always worth asking, because he does remind, like Jim Leonard, I think the flaw against him, at least on the outside looking in, was that he's not the character that Bielema is. And Fickell understands how to play the game too. It's not exactly the same as Brett, but Fickell knows how to go out. I mean, Jim Leonard is somewhere in between Fickell and Paul Christ, and I think Wisconsin felt like they needed a guy who was really going to embrace this portal and NIL. And I'm not saying Leonard wouldn't have, but there was at least a little bit of track record with Fickell doing it. And so you're right. If it doesn't work with Fickell, they still have to find someone that can navigate Wisconsin football tradition, but also this new college landscape.
Right. And again, I and pretty much anyone else thought this was an absolute home run hire. And I still think it can work out very, very well for Wisconsin. But, you know, you also have to, you know, be honest about the things we've seen over the last 2 years. And it hasn't been encouraging. It doesn't feel like they're closer to making the playoff. It feels like they're further away from making the playoff. And that's really why the hire was made.
Yep.
Is that Wisconsin was a program that was hovering on the fringes of the 14 playoff and making Big Ten championship games and finishing in the top 15 or top 10. How do we take that next step? Well, why not hire a coach who made the playoff at a Group of Five team, who maybe if he doesn't make the playoff that year is the head coach at Notre Dame instead of his former defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman? There's all sorts of what ifs there if you want to go down that road.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin got him. And that was seen as a bold, you know, risky, but hey, they're going for it type move. And sometimes those work out, and this one could still work out. But objectively, it's hard to sit here in January 2025 saying like it's working out right now. So something's got to shift there. And this is the season where it has to happen.
Yeah, I don't think Fickell would say it worked out. The one thing here, and I don't mean to, like, it's not like downer, because I actually think things can turn. It's more of, if the Badgers go out next year and win 7 to 8 games, and especially what those 7 or 8 games are, people are going to feel like the program has then, especially if they get to Wisconsin football, the vibes around the program and the fan excitement will turn, because everyone was gone. Like that Camp Randall was empty, and people around me were asking, wait, what's the buyout for Fickell at the end of that Minnesota game? So the bar has been lowered, and so he can quickly raise it back up, and well, clear that bar and then raise it back up with a respectable season, beating some traditional opponents, maybe one upset in there, and get some trophies back. And everyone's going to be very excited really quickly about Badger football.
Right. And you know, I think it's also, you know, who do you beat and how do you beat them? How does it look?
Yep.
I think at this point, because it's looked so different the last couple of years, it has to resemble – what Wisconsin football, you know, was for decades and decades and was really respected. You know, again, that's why Iowa gets respect. That's why Minnesota has gotten a little bit of respect. Illinois, you know what it's going to look like with that program, given who their head coach is. And so I think that's important, is that they need to win. You can't bottom out like you did at the end of the season again, but you also have to, you know, have those traits of a successful Wisconsin football operation that a lot of us are and not certainly the Badger fans, maybe more so than anyone, they'll be able to identify that.
Adam, really appreciate the time. Great stuff.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. This is the Jump Around 3.0.